Hi everyone, welcome to the Art of Unbecoming. Today we have Rina Sassi on. Rina
Hello.
is a North African Muslim woman, first generation American living in Tongva Territory, aka Los Angeles. She is a mother of two tweens and has been a seeker of divine light and truth since as far back as she can remember. Rina is a polymath and an energy worker, pairing ancient techniques with modern ones to facilitate her own healing, which includes the healing of the earth body and all its creatures. Rina works mostly with Sufi metaphysics and prophetic medicine and also offers personalized nutrition plans based on individual hair tissue mineral analysis. One of Rina's gifts, supported and nourished throughout her life by her Heavens team, is the ability to read, express, and harmonize cosmic codes and energy dynamics, both in the collective and in individuals. Rina's sole mission in life is to help actualize love and liberation on Earth, or in other words, to decolonize our souls. Thank you so much for being on today, Rina. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Thank you, Emma. It's good to be here.
Okay, so I found you because you wrote something that honestly blew my mind, and it's something that I have been thinking and feeling intuitively, but frankly didn't have the guts or balls, for lack of better words, to come out and say. And it was your post where you were talking. I can just read it really quick because it's in right in front of me. It says, "If you love or hate Trump, you have something to heal. Trump is a master cult leader. He is leading both the cult of love Trump and the cult of hate Trump." And I thought that was so fascinating because I think what we're seeing in America and really the whole world today, not just with Trump, but we can talk about specifically Trump for a little bit, is just people sort of participating in what they feel like is so these social justice movements that really may be sometimes counterproductive because it's, to me, and correct me if I'm wrong when we get into the conversation, but it sort of sounds like what you're saying when you put all of your energy into hating someone, it can be counterproductive for healing.
Yeah, it's not only counterproductive to healing, but it's also, I think it causes more disease ultimately, like whether it's in the physical body of the person or in the collective body. Because ultimately, I work with energy, and so it dawned on me, this sort of dawned on me last year during COVID when, there was, I've always sort of felt aligned. I do believe that the social justice movements are necessary, that there's a place for everything in the collective, and that there's a lot of work to be done both in in social settings and in collective and community settings, but also within ourselves. But on an energetic and a sort of in a Sufi and a spiritual perspective, all the work really begins within ourselves. And so I came to the realization that there is this last year during COVID that the that there COVID brought us a is in homeopathy, everything has a potential, everything in nature has a potential to be a poison or a medicine. And so what causes disease in one person, this is actually the primary homeopathic principle, can cure also in the same person or cure in another person. And so there is wisdom to why we are like faced as a collective with epidemics, with conflicts, because there is, that's where the light enters, right? The famous Rumi quotes, the Sufi Rumi quotes, Qaddasallahu sirruh, that where he says, the wounds is where the light enters. And so that's where we always have to look for the medicine and look for the light, is in the wounding and in the disease and in the shadows. And so I noticed when COVID hit that there was, I'm in medicine, I work with diseases, I work with infectious diseases in particular, and I noticed that there was just whatever Trump was saying, people were just refusing to listen and to accept it. And I dislike Trump. I don't like the person. I don't like him. But I
Me
don't.
neither.
And in fact, I hated him. I had a such a deep hatred for him that I refused to even hear his voice. I refused to look at him. I refused, like, anything I heard about Trump, I would hear through other people and hearsay or through basically satire in social media. And I was shocked at that level of sort of it's just a it's of reactivity, of sort of unexamined reactivity. And I started to wonder, like, who in me has that too, that just will refuse something because I hate the person, or I hate the delivery, or I hate the way it's being received. Like, do I get to decide the way the medicine is packaged? Not really, right? And so, when I looked inside myself and I asked myself, who is that? Who has this hatred? And who is this person that is willing to give my power? Because hatred is an emotion, it's a feeling, it's an energy. And if you can imagine that all of us have energy pouring into us constantly, divine light pouring into us through our crown chakra, into our bodies. And then when I have an emotion or I have a reaction to somebody, I'm if you can imagine putting a cable or a cord between me and that person, because now I have a dynamic between that person that I've sort of sparked or that has sparked. And when I'm in the energy of hate, I'm draining hate into that cord and that cable and into that person. And I'm ultimately disempowering myself. And I'm giving my power, my vital force, my life energy to that person. And to me, that is the worst kind of colonization, to take my soul and my life force. And that was just like, I was like, whoa. And I realized that just the hatred that I was in towards this person or towards anybody. And for Trump, really what he represents to me is he's just a shadow aspect of white supremacy, of actually this government. He is just a personified version of what this whole nation is built on. Which is a master slave dynamic, right? Which is a victim perpetrator dynamic, a colonizer colonized dynamic. And so for me to sit in that energy of hate, I'm essentially sitting in that energy of accepting of or internalizing that this person has a superiority over me and that I am in there. And I do believe that I have that programming that I am in the role of the victim because of my ancestral history where we, North Africa is probably, and the Middle East area, Swana region, where I'm from, is probably the most colonized region of the world. It's been continuously colonized for thousands of years. In fact, the two countries my parents are from, Egypt and Libya, they really haven't had self-governance for ancient Egypt. Basically, Egyptians haven't governed themselves since the time of ancient, since the time of the pharaohs. So I think that wounding of that being like I'm constantly being positioned as the victim, and I'm interpreting and I'm reacting from this place of hate because I'm that is my victim, really, that is reacting to this white supremacist that's standing in front of me that really represents a whole structure of colonization that's thousands of years old, right? So I'm bringing up a lot. It's a lot of ancestral wounding that's coming up and that's being asked to heal. So when I realized that by allowing myself to stay in that feeling of hatred, and sort of repulsion, pushing back or resisting, that I'm still allowing to be positioned as the victim in this kind of master slave dynamic, and that I am disempowering myself, and that I wanted to heal that. I wanted to decolonize on the deepest part of me, which is on the soul level. And so, yeah, I think ultimately that this whole pandemic is here to dismantle this victim consciousness that many of us, especially Black Indigenous people of color, carry for thousands of years, but also white people too, because if we're carrying the traumas of being colonized, but then you must also be carrying the traumas of being colonizer, right? So the and how and what happens with white people when this paradigm is activated, this master slave, how are they positioned in this dynamic, and who is positioning them in this dynamic? Is it also ancestral programming? Is it victim programming? I think it's always victim programming, because it's the victim really that proceeds from the place of inferiority, and that the victim has on the other side of it the villain, and also the other side of it the rescuer or the savior.
Wow, that's so powerful, and so many things came up for me during that. Thank you for sharing all of that, first of all. So let me ask you then, do you feel, this is a very controversial question, do you feel on some level that Trump to you personally was a gift then to mirror back to you all of these things that were unhealed within you?
Yes, because I am an alchemist and I can turn anything into medicine. So yes, just like I had said before, shadows are there, triggers are there for us to heal something, right? Like if we're never triggered, if we're never put in a place of pain or discomfort, then we're not going to ever try to, we're not going to seek, we're not going to grow, we're not going to expand. So yeah, I do think that, you know, he could, he's just like everything else in nature. He can be a poison, he can be that cult leader, you know, where regardless of what he's saying, your reactions, your perception is being commanded by what he says, basically. So he could be that, he could be a poison, or he could, you can use him to heal something inside, which is, and yeah, he's a mirror. I mean, everything around us is really a mirror reflection of us, and we all have an inner Trump as well. The white supremacist in me is the one who decided that I am going to be a victim in this plot, right? So I have internalized a white supremacist shadow, because I'm continuously identifying as the victim, right? So yeah, I mean, I believe everything is sent by the divine, that nothing can, you know, go past the divine's will, right? So if it's happening, it's divinely ordained. And if it's happening, it's also happening because we are making it happen, because there's something within us that needs healing. And this country has a very big karmic debt to the people of this the lands, these lands, indigenous peoples, to Black indigenous peoples, and to people around the world. And you know, we are in this planetary shift right now, and those karmic agreements have been revoked. That's it. There's no more master slave paradigm, and it takes a while for the earth to catch up to that. But we are now in this place of transformation. We're kind of in this bridge place where we're moving from that old paradigm into the new, and we're all having to confront within us and outside of us this master slave paradigm. But we're seeing, as you know, right now, even on the world stage, and in specifically in American politics, the system is in collapse. Like we can pretend it's not, but it is. So it's coming down. So it's really now, you know, we can focus on all the perpetrators and how we're going to hold them accountable, which I do think they will be held accountable. But I do also believe in divine justice, and that I don't have to carry out justice. I believe, you know, it will eventually, that that the karmic debt will be paid, and there will be agreements made on both sides, and that there has to be some kind of karmic repair. But at this and in the meanwhile, if we're moving into a new world, we can focus on, you know, all the pain and all the suffering, or we can try to heal that so that we could start building our new world. And I really, that's really what I'm my heart is in is really liberating ourselves from these old belief systems and structures and this paradigm that we've all kind of been stuck in, this colonizer paradigm, and to build autonomous, sovereign communities made of autonomous, sovereign human beings.
Wow. Oh, again, so powerful. So another thing came up for me when you were speaking towards the beginning of that. You mentioned that, like, you believe that everything is a gift from the divine, and I am a firm believer in that too. I had a conversation with one of my friends that I actually mentioned in the last podcast that I recorded. And he said he's a believer that that all is perfect. And he was like, I had some friends come up to me and they're like, Brendan, how could you believe that all is perfect when there's oppression and women are getting raped and all of these horrible, painful things that we do see happening on the earth plane? How would you answer that? Do you because I know that it's not black and white, and obviously there's nuance, but if everything is a gift from the divine, do you firmly believe that that is every experience in our lives?
So it really, I can't, I don't, this is like, a huge philosophical question that philosophers have been like playing with for centuries and stuff. So I feel like it's not something I could just answer. And I feel like it's something, there's probably multiple truths and it's all paradoxical, at the same time. And it
Of course.
doesn't, it's probably not anything that can make rational sense really to us. But I do think that like the best way I can answer that is that we live in a multi-dimensional universe and we have not seen the whole picture, the whole story. We only see this little tiny fragment of a thing and we see it through our lens, which is, veiled by so many shadows and beliefs and just so many, like, how do we know what we see? How do we even know what we're seeing? You know what I mean? Like that's how far this question can go. Like, what are we even seeing? Like, isn't this all an illusion? Isn't that kind of the that is also spiritually like most, the Sufis do say everything is perfect. And the universe is exactly where it's supposed to be, and it's doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing, and we are doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing. Everything is in its place. But at the same time, there's the paradox too, where there's things that need to be healed and fixed. And we're kind of, the human being seems to be at the center of that. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, and two, like, that just made me think of something with, like, a lot of these social justice movements that we see happening, which I also believe are absolutely necessary. This is kind of random. I don't know why this came up for me after you said that, but, like, I feel like so much of what we see humans engaging in these days is trying to control other people. And you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, like, you sort of wish that people could just accept that that's who Trump is and that's what he said, and we can't necessarily, quote, like, do anything about it. You know, we have to accept that that is the reality right now and then adjust ourselves that way. But I feel like w there's a lot of us who are having a really hard time accepting what is right now. And so whether a lot of us are doing it unconsciously, I believe, trying to control other people and just be like, well, they shouldn't be saying that, or they shouldn't be doing this, or yada, 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 which again is, I believe, a waste of our vital life force energy, like you were mentioning. Do you feel like you see that happening too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see that on every level, like even in terms of like nature and how we're approaching this virus, it's all about let's control nature, right? Let's sterilize the universe. Let's try to play this game with viruses and bacteria that we can outsmart them and control what's basically happening in our environment and what's happening. So it and that's all very sorry to say, everybody, if you get offended, but delusional. Because like we said, it's a multi-dimensional universe and we have no we are seeing not even a small percentage of the reality of the truth of what is of being. And so and I think the reason why people are so, we've been living in this control paradigm for centuries now, And that is how power is defined for most people, is how much power I have over the other, how much I can extract from nature, how much I can pull from other resources. It's not about resourcing from the self or finding power from within. It's all about, it's extractive because of that master slave colonizer paradigm. It's a control paradigm. And it comes again from the sense of, it's really from a sense of inferiority that there's no power within, there's no control from within, therefore we have to dominate the outside world, right? And so again, it really comes down to, and I think the reason why we're seeing that so much right now is because that paradigm has been revoked and the earth is shifting out of that. And that is scary for people because we don't know where we're going. And there's a, and that, and already most people were living in this place of powerlessness and codependency on institutions and governments. And so now, as we know, everybody subconsciously sort of knows that things are in collapse and shifting. I think there is this more of this sense of victimhood coming up, and that there is like a loss of control and power. And the very first thing that somebody in flight or fight does is try to control their environment, because that's a necessary part of survival, is to make sure that the environment is safe, right? But we're not in, this is not a, like, I mean, in some cases, for some people, there might be true danger and they're in flight or fight. And I think also that's why, the media is constantly fear-mongering, so that we're constantly in this flight or fight mode. And also, in particular, for BIPOC communities, the oppression, and we see more of the oppression, like all of this trauma porn on in social media. To keep us in that mode of identifying with being victims and having no power, and therefore needing to control our environments and what's around us. And that's also why we will surrender the control of our environment to outside forces, like to the government or to institutions, is because of that sense of powerlessness.
So true. I've thought that so many times this year where I'm like, oh my God, this is all so intentional, because I have a trauma psychology background, and I know what happens too. Like when you go into fight or flight mode, you can't critically think. You're more likely to sort of just comply in order to gain a semblance of quote unquote safety, which is really the illusion of it, you know? So I totally see that happening too. And it's frustrating because there are so many folks who still, again, I don't want to sound judgmental, but still just blindly accept that the virus narrative, you know, blindly accept all of it, because again, it's like I believe going back to that powerlessness consciousness where it's like, well, I don't know any better. I'm not an expert, so I just sort of have to agree with whatever somebody's telling me to do, because I haven't remembered my own inner authority, my own inner sovereignty. And so then let me ask you, how, as a Muslim woman, how do you relate to politics? How do you relate to the media and institutions telling you that you are an oppressed human? Do you still, how does that
So
resonate with you?
I don't really relate to media. I don't really follow me.
Okay.
I've always been kind of
I
like
figured.
in a different space than most people. I'll hear things, and I'm also not the typical Muslim woman. So I've been raised most of my life. I've been living in the US. My family is secular Muslim, so I didn't really grow up in a religious family. So I don't necessarily fit in with the conservative Muslim community, and I'm also, I have the mystical aspect of Islam, which kind of also marginalized me from Muslim communities. And so I don't really belong to, like, so the mainstream American culture, I've never been a part of, really. And also, within all the communities, I've kind of always been like in the margins. So what affects me, it's interesting that you say that right after we were talking about the virus, because I remember that one of the things that was shocking for me at the beginning when they mandated masks was I instantly got the trigger of like, that we have a modern Muslims, all of us, whether we lived in oppressive Muslim countries or not, which, by the way, is not following Islamic tradition when they are oppressive towards women, but we have the memory of our religion being used against us to cover women's faces, to hide them, to silence them, to suppress them. And so when the mask mandate came on, that was such a trigger for me. Like, all of a sudden, it was like, oh my God, like overnight, everybody, like it turned into Afghanistan. Like, suddenly, I can't go outside. I have to cover my face. I can't be next to people. I can't touch people. Like, to me, that sounded like a Wahhabi, which is like the extremist ideology of amongst Muslims, are usually from the Wahhabi ideology. So for me, it was like it really triggered all of that, and I was like terrified. Because it brought up so much historical pain and collective pain. And I was surprised to, I felt like I was the only one, like even amongst Muslim communities, nobody really made that connection. So it's interesting because I think there's a lot of other communities and maybe even, Black, Indigenous people of color have a history of being, saved from genocide if their face was covered, or if they're so there might be a feeling of safety when the mask is on the face for some people. So it's I don't yeah my relation to media and sort of like the typical stereotypes of Muslim women. I don't relate, but also people, when they find out I'm Muslim, they're like, oh, you don't look Muslim. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Interesting. Okay, so then another question came up for me. Do you feel that sort of disengaging with politics or with the media is privilege? Because I'm sure, I don't know if you've heard, but that's typically an argument, especially like as a white woman who doesn't really engage with the media. I've really shifted the way I perceive all of it. I have been told that that's me acting from a place of
Oh,
privilege.
I don't know.
Have you
I've
heard
heard
that
that
argument?
argument, but I don't know. Like, I don't really like to debate like degrees of privilege and oppression and stuff, because that's all very relative, and I think that's for people to decide on their own. I mean, of course, there's obvious markers of privilege, right? And yes, with privilege comes certain responsibility and definitely accountability. But I'm not sure that like listening to propaganda is helpful for anybody, because that's really what media is.
And that's kind of what I wanted to get at. I figured you were going to say something like that because it's just such a hard conversation to have with folks who don't see the media as a form of propaganda. They see it as ultimate truth, and so then it's like where do you even start having this conversation? Because they see it through the lens as the media always tells the truth, and then I could see why they would think that it's wrong to disconnect from that. But when you have the perspective of the media being a form of propaganda, you're like, well, nobody needs to be listening to
So
it,
yeah, I don't know. I can't say like what white people need to do to hold and own their privilege. Like, I feel like there's probably many ways of doing that, and all of them are necessary. But yeah, the media and prop the and that's another thing. Like, for me, I remember, we're Arab, so news is always in our lives. The news is constantly running in my house as a kid, and politics is always the conversation and stuff, and everything is political for us. So, but I remember, like, as a teenager, very clearly hearing the distortion and the deception in media, and I made the decision then, which is now like 30 years ago, that I'm not going, or 25 years ago, that I'm not going to listen to that, because I know they're lying to me. And that was just an intuitive thing. Like, I didn't have to go into and study the media to know that. Like, it was just an intuitive, some intuitive guidance. And I made the decision on anything mainstream, official status quo information, history they're giving me. I know there is distortion around. Even as a child, I remember when they told me, hearing the story of Thanksgiving and that the pilgrims and the Native Americans were exchanging turkeys. And even as a child, I was like, that's a bullshit story. Like, that, I know that's not the truth. I didn't know what the truth was, but it was like, that's a lie. You know what I mean? Like, and so for me, like 30 years later, for people to just still be like, the media is what you need to be listening to, it's just like, what? Like, you guys still are not hearing the lies? Like, why are we still? I think it was Hood Healer that had the quote recently, why are we still protecting, or why are you protecting the liars? Yeah, why do we still, why do we keep going back to known abusers? Why do we keep listening to unreliable liars? Like, people we know have lied and continuously lie. I don't know. And now there's like plenty of evidence that they lied. You know, like, we know that they invaded Iraq and there's, they've displaced millions and killed millions all on a lie of weapons of mass destruction. And that's a fact. Like, we know they lie, and they will rearrange the whole world to follow through with their lies. So why are we believing them? I don't know.
Yeah, that's one thing that I have found to be like weirdly fascinating. My mom is in this realm too. She's also a writer like myself, and she has written about how she believes the general population is in a Stockholm syndrome situation with the government. where like they are, we all know that they are corrupt and that they have abused specifically like BIPOC communities. But then it's like they also promise us that they're going to be our saviors, you know? So it's like the typical trauma bond, if you will, that I feel is happening. And again, yeah, it's tricky because I find, speaking back to like what I mentioned earlier, like wanting to control people, it's hard to just like let people be where they're at, you know, and everybody wakes up in their own time. Because I, man, I even feel myself wanting to like shake people and be
Yeah,
like, what
it's
the
really
fuck are you
hard.
doing? You know? It is hard.
But you know, they might want to
There
be
was one
shaking
other
us
thing
too
I
and be
was
like, what the
going.
fuck is wrong with you? So
Exactly. And again, that's what's fascinating too, is like truth has been so distorted at this point. And when you mentioned that it appeared when you said that, like, I just follow my intuition. It was that an easy decision for you to just be like, no, I just trust my gut. I trust my
Yeah,
intuitive
I've kind of
feeling.
always just have had really, really strong intuitive guidance and listened to it. It's part of my I have a very strong orphan child archetype, and that comes with the orphan child is, yeah. And I didn't, it's not like something I was conscious of, that I was that I was intuitive and following my intuition, but all of my life decisions have been intuitive, really, my big life decisions. Yeah, and I just, yeah, and then I don't,
That's
and it's interesting too, because that's not an acceptable way to live, right? Like, if you can't prove why, then you can't be have make that decision or that choice and stuff. So I think that's also why I've kind of been just on my own timeline, really, because it's not, it doesn't work in the realm of everybody else's rational decision making stuff. So, you know.
Oh, that just gave me chills, and that's so synchronistic for me because I too like have extremely strong intuitive feelings. I mean,
Yeah,
I
all of
believe
us
we all
do.
do to some degree, but I think so many folks are it's just so drowned out that they don't even know how to remember that inner voice. But like, I have just gaslit myself my entire life because I was taught, I mean, as like so many people, especially in America, I mean, but I'm sure it's literally everywhere, even more so in other countries, but just to really trust inner authority over your own self, you know. And I saw a quote the other day that said something along the lines of like, we've traded our own intuitive spiritual knowings to trust quote unquote like data and experts and stuff like that. And again, that's another rabbit hole because it's like, yeah, sometimes data is good, if you will, but then so much of data and experts that we're listening to
Oh
nowadays
yeah,
that
that's
are
all corrupt
bots.
too. And the other thing too is if I feel like, make your decision intuitively because you'll find data to predict, to back up any kind of choice at this point, because we live in the time of the age of information. Like there's information on anything and everything, and you can construct and analyze things to make back up your point. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't take yeah, like we're human beings, we're like masters of reasoning and rationality, so we can find anything and make it prove what we want it to prove, you know what I mean? So I think following intuition is should be, I mean, not I wouldn't say should be, but I think we're meant to actually have both, to have a balance between both, not to, be to one extreme or the other, because we do need the rational faculty for so many things. But yeah, there's, and also, maybe because I'm a mother too, and we get gaslit a lot about our intuition, because a lot of things for our children is just intuitively we know what's best for them, and there's nobody else that's going to know better for them, but allowing ourselves to just accept, to know that, to trust that we've all been given this guidance system, this inner guidance system, and it's always on. We're constantly getting intuitive hits. We get better at understanding and listening and following them the more trust we have in them. You know what I mean? So I understand that though, because I know, like my husband, for example, he can't necessarily identify an intuitive hit because of that sort of that programming of not trusting what's coming from within. So it takes practice. It's a practice, really. But like I said before, it's very. I feel like intuition is very often comes very neutrally. Like it when it arrives, when it hits you, it's neutral. And then if there's something, like there might be emotions that come out of it, like, oh, fear, like, oh shit, I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? But it usually comes neutral, and then the mind might start making up stories about it. So that's a good way to identify that an intuitive hit. Another good way, I think, is knowing that they're expecting that there's going to be resistance, and expecting that there's going to be resistance from other people, because that's part of the intuitive guidance, is to be tested on it, to see, do you really trust yourself and your own inner authority over other people's? So other people will show up to sort of to in a way, and it's really just divine guidance as well. It's divine orchestration to see how strong you are in holding your center and your own authority. So they'll come to try to pull you out of that intuitive place. So like a lot of times when I most of the time, actually almost every time I followed a certain direction in my life, and it was usually from intuitive guidance, my family would come against it, right? And or people close to me would come against it and try to pull me out of it. Yeah, so to expect that there would be some kind of resistance, either from within or from without, or both. But yeah, we all have it.
Yeah, I completely, I mean, we're all
Yeah.
born with the same technology, you know? So there's no way, I think, 'cause I'm sure there are some people listening that are like, "Oh, I don't have that, or I don't know how to get in touch with it." Do you have any like practices? Like, I'm sure that like meditation or something like that is probably a good way to start, to really start sitting with your own thoughts.
Yeah, meditation is good. So a lot of actually my intuitive guidance comes through the form of questioning. So a lot of times I will, so now I know, like, to first of all, shadow work is really important, because shadows will be the things that will block our intuitive guidance, because it's the shadows that will be like, no, not that, or what about this, or what about that? So when we can integrate those shadows, there's less sort of inner chatter in our inside. And so I think for me is whenever I get a feeling, I allow it to sit with me, whether it's a question that I'm getting from intuitive guidance, or sometimes it comes emotionally, sometimes physically. Like a lot of times, I think, and because of my work is in the healing arts, I'll feel things in my physical body or my mental, emotional body that the collective is going to feel in a few weeks, so that I can get the medicine for it. But the what was I saying before that? I lost my train of thought.
You were
Oh,
mentioning that, like,
yeah, just to
just the way that you'll get into it by
sit with
asking a
it. And
question.
if it's fear that's coming up, the best question I have for stuff like that is, who is feeling it? Where am I feeling it? Who is feeling it? So I'm trying to identify which aspect of me is feeling the fear, and what am I going to do about it? Those are quite kind of questions that I ask, especially in the moment of trigger. I will ask, like, if I'm feeling like disempowered, or I'm feeling triggered, I'm feeling angry, like somebody, whatever, somebody said something and I'm feeling triggered by it. Instead of reacting, I will try to ask myself, okay, what am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? And what am I going to do about it? And so that immediately will bring me into myself and out of managing somebody else's perception or whatever they're, and which is something that I actually is kind of one of my contracts in life, and something that I've had to heal, is this managing of other people's perceptions. That's sort of yeah.
Oh yeah.
But
Oh, I totally resonate with that so much. Dear
yeah.
God, that's like been the bane of my
So
existence.
that's really hard for me to do, to stop myself from like trying to manage their perception and come in to manage my own. But to do that, so I'll ask myself, what am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? And what am I going to do? In like a if I'm out of the trigger, I'll ask myself, so like I've been feeling triggered, I've been feeling a certain emotion, whether it's sadness, grief, fear, anxiety, whatever. And then if once I'm out, I'll do whatever I need to do to get through that. So I use a lot of medicine. So I'll use flower essences, I'll use my homeopathy, I'll do meditations, I'll take baths, I'll do energy work, I'll do a lot of stuff to support me, but I'm not trying to suppress my feelings or my emotions. I want to work through them because I know they have messages for me, right? That they're coming to tell me something. So I don't want to drown them out or suppress them, because I also know that that's eventually going to turn into a deeper disturbance if I do suppress it. And then once I'm out of the trigger, or I'm out of that, like the depth of the emotion, I will start asking deeper questions, like, so who was that? And was that, so one of the best questions I've gotten for a sort of self-examination is from Mariam Hassna. I love her teachings. I'm in her school. Yes, she's amazing.
I
And
love
one of
her.
her
She's so
questions
wonderful.
is this mine? Yeah, so I will
Oh,
ask
wow.
myself,
So
is this
simple.
mine? And most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, and another practice I've learned from Kenneth Hovere, who actually works with Mariam Hassna a lot and is one of my energy healers, is to give like a percentage of how much is yours and how much belongs to, the ancestors, how much belongs to your community, your family, your collective, your whatever, your neighborhood, how much, and to break it down like that. Most of the time when I ask myself that question, it's usually a lot of it is not mine. Like sometimes I'll be like, oh, 5% of it is mine, and 95% is something else. It's from the collective, it's from my ancestors. And then once you can locate where it's coming from, you can start working on healing that aspect of you.
I love that because that's something too I've been thinking about recently, like especially in like the New Age community, I guess you could say, is that when people like feel anxiety or when they feel depressed or something like that, I feel like I have picked up that I automatically need to go to like, how can I ground myself? How can I work through this emotion? And I realized that like, while the intention was like pure to sort of sit with myself, it was really about, again, another form of escapism, you know? So I love that. It sounds, I love when you said like, you'll take your baths or you'll do your flower essences or something like that. But the intention is not to get rid of the emotion. It's still to like be with it and sort of befriend and commune with it. I think that's so beautiful because like we've come a long way in society, but I still think that there is so much stigma just around emotion in general, you know? And one of my friends wrote something on Instagram yesterday, and she basically was just saying like heartbreak and pain is just a part of being human. Like we just simply, and it's so simple, but like we just need to normalize it and stop trying
and
to escape
death.
It,
it's
you know? But that's hard because our medical system is
No,
set
go
up.
ahead. You're
Sorry.
Right. Right.
Go
I just
ahead.
said, and death too is also part of being
I was
human.
just saying, yeah, Oh my gosh, absolutely. Oh God, that's a whole nother conversation we go down. I have so many thoughts about that. But our medical system is set up in such a way, and you obviously know this as a woman who works in medicine. Our medical system is set up in such a way where everything is so stigmatized, you know, and all of these normal human experiences are totally taken out of context, and we're told that we're wrong and we have these disorders. And I watched my
Oh
mom
my
almost
God.
die inside of the industrial medical complex. Yeah, and she, because she was so stigmatized when really she had severe trauma and was being psychologically abused, and she healed all of that and is totally healthy, if you will, now. So, I mean, I'm sure you could touch on that, the medical system and all of that. But yeah, it's just,
Yeah,
we've
you
just
know,
been lied to, period.
It's we've been lied
About a
to. The
lot of
medical
things.
system is like a whole other podcast, which I'd be happy to discuss with you too. But the medical
Yeah.
system is just like it's part of the colonizer system. So it also is based on the dynamic of the victim, perpetrator, and savior. And the savior in the medical industrial complex is the colonial or colonizer system is the industrial complex, right? That is the savior. And the victims are human beings, and nature or other humans are the villains, right? And so, yeah, so there's so much with the medical complex that we can get into. But I don't know, should we get into that?
Actually, you know what? I'll probably just have you on for another podcast on that, because that would probably, I have so many thoughts on that too, and I love talking about that shit, so that'd probably just take another hour. But there was something that I wanted to ask you specifically just about this idea of victim consciousness, because I even have wrestled this with this in my own life and just my intersection of the ways that I have been severely traumatized by my own family and things like that. And did you, do you feel like in your own journey, in order for you to release victimhood, you had to have a period of time where you really
Oh
owned
yeah, and
that
the
you
thing is
were
too
a
is that
victim?
always that we always have that victim with us too. So it's I think it yeah, we have to own, of course, because people have truly been victimized and are still being victimized. Like we're not that's valid. It's a valid experience to be traumatized and victimized. And but the thing is we all have a victim, and even the person that is doing the victimizing, the perpetrator, is doing it usually from the place of the victim, right? But and so once, even when we healed certain wounds, we still will always have a victim inside us that will see things from the victim perspective, because the victim is a necessary part of survival. It's the victim that that you know tunes into danger and has the survival skills to try to get out of danger. Like it is a victim that's needed in flight or fight mode to be able to navigate through danger, right? And to know where danger is and to get away from it. So the victim is necessary. We're not going to get rid of it, but we can become conscious of it and we can become allies with it. Instead of it becoming us, we just know that it's an aspect of us, and we learn to manage that victim consciousness rather than it sort of taking over, and we become fully, we only identify as that, even if we're not consciously identifying. So yeah.
Love that. Do you so are you familiar with parts work by chance, like the psychology? I guess, yeah, I don't know what else you'd call it, but it's
Is that
called
like
internal family
constellation work?
systems. It's like a mode of therapy. I'm not sure. But it's therapy. It's this like therapy model that completely changed my life, because I was introduced to like inner child work and stuff like that. But inner internal family systems is basically like there's a capital S self, which is like your soul essence that is completely untouched by trauma, and then you have all of these inner working parts. So like instead of an inner child, you kind of have
Yes,
inner children, if
totally.
that makes
I
sense.
so I don't.
Which that kind of sounds like
Yeah,
what
so
you're
I guess it
describing,
sounds
which is
similar
really, I
to
love that
archetypal
stuff.
work, which I do a lot of archetypal work. That's my
Yeah,
So
that's
yeah,
honestly kind of
that's
exactly
exactly
what
what
it
it is. And
is.
I think that's very powerful work to do is to, and that's actually one of my upcoming, I'm going to start offering that as a service too, is to do consultations on archetypal work and classes on archetypal work. But to know your soul map basically through the different archetypes that are sort of in there and commanding, or the different energetic patterns that are that make up your soul and your soul contract. There's so much to talk about.
Oh, so good. There is so much to talk about, because that gets me into like the idea of labels and how we like have been taught to label ourselves and like these singular terms, and how we just
Totally. And
forgotten our
I did want to
multidimensional nature.
say, speaking of multidimensional, and I did want to say about the medical industrial complex that it's not the only system of science and medicine out there. That's part of the their that that colonization is to make us feel like there's only one, that science is a monolith. There's only one perspective in science. There's only one science of under, there's only one way of understanding human biology and the human health and disease systems. And that's just flat out false. There is systems of medicine that are thousands of years old and are time tested, like Chinese Ayurvedic and the prophetic medicine that I use and study. And homeopathy is also a traditional medicine a few hundred years old. And so there's options for people. I think that's also people feel trapped because there's really no other
Oh gosh,
alternative
yeah.
or options even shown as available. And if they are shown, they're dismissed as like woo or pseudoscience. But that
Pseudoscience.
there are resources out there, and they're holistic, and they're spiritual, so they will support this mind, spirit, and the body, and all the aspects of the human being. And so they optimize health, and they support through health. So yeah, not that the nothing good has come out of modern medicine. Emergency medicine is amazing. Their diagnostic tools are amazing. It's just that medicine is, in my opinion, as a practitioner of a system of medicine, is not meant to be industrialized. It's meant to be personalized, right? So medicine is a personal journey. So for it to be industrialized already, that's going to be a corrupt system.
Absolutely. Well, and that goes back into like to I was listening to this interview a few days ago, and it was just talking about how our perception creates our reality, obviously. And when the media is, yes, we have different media outlets, but at the same time, they're all sort of still, they still have this fear mongering, just propaganda type of content that they're putting out. And so that's, again, I feel like the media really controls people's perceptions when it comes to the medical system, because you don't see anybody talking about like coffee enemas or flower essences on CNN. You know what I'm saying? Which those are ancient practices. And you know what's so fascinating too about this? I posted something about just questioning the vaccine on my Instagram a few weeks ago, and another white person came at me and told me that I was engaging in white supremacy for questioning vaccines. And I was like, oh my goodness, the way that folks again, to be non-politically correct, have been brainwashed because I'm like, no, if you really want to talk about white supremacy, let's talk about how the Rockefellers came in and completely overthrew all the holistic practices in the American medical system, you know, back in the 1900s. Like, that's white supremacy. And it's just like, the
There's so many
brainwashing is
layers.
just goes so, there's so many layers to it, you know, and I don't want to project that onto people because not
Yeah,
everybody that believes in that is brainwashed,
yeah,
but
there's
for
just a lot of
lack of
false
nuance there. But yeah.
narratives out there and distortions in the truth because the medical industrial complex is actually complicit and a factor in the violence against Black, Indigenous people of color. Like there's a strong, there's a history of it being of medical violence against people of color all over the world and on this land too. So, and in particular with the vaccines as well. Vaccines are a part of, you know, the WHO is a neo-colonial institution that has sort of conquered Africa through medical technologies. So, you know, colonialism comes through many ways, and the medical system is not a se separate from all the other colonial systems. So, yeah, it's just as violent, and it has a history of violence towards Black, Indigenous people of color. So to even to expect that the vaccines are, you know, there to help and support us and protect us is presumptuous already. Maybe it is, but that's a present like that's an assumption that has yet to be proven.
Absolutely. That brings up so many more things we could talk about, but I'm just gonna have to have you on again. One last question that I wanted to ask before we wrap up. So even just talking about like all, I have these conversations all the time, but I even feel myself sort of getting overwhelmed where it's like, oh my God, there is so many layers to all of this. Like there's so much corruption. And I sort of get into the state of like paralyzation because I'm like, well, I can't do anything. So I'm just gonna like lay on my couch and stare at my ceiling type of thing. So, and I know there's so many folks who are in those positions right now because this, it's a lot. There's a fuck ton happening. So what do you feel like? Do you ever feel that way? And when you do, what do you like, how are you going about changing the world, if
Yeah,
that
I'm
makes
just
sense?
changing
That's
myself,
a really big
really.
question, but what does that
That's
look
all
like
I
for
can
you?
do. I don't have control over the world. I don't have control over other people. I can't, yeah, I don't, that's not my territory. It's not my business. You know, I spent a lot of my life trying to change the world. Isn't there, there's a Rumi quote that says that too, right? I spent, or I think that Shamsi Tabrizi, his teacher, that he says, or was it Rumi? I love saying these quotes, but I don't ever memorize them word for word, and I feel like I destroyed them.
That's
So
okay, the gist of it.
I thought I was smart, so I ch tried to change the world, but then I became clever and I changed myself or something like
Yes,
that,
I love this
right?
quote.
Yeah, then I became wise
Yep,
or
I think it was
something,
then I
and I,
became
yeah,
wise,
so
maybe,
that's
or
where
something
I'm
like
at with
that.
it. Like, I think if we all heal within, because what's happening out on the world stage is just what's happening within all of us. This is just a reflection of what is within us. All this garbage, all this distortion, all this deception that we see, all this violence that we see is everything that we've accepted within ourselves. And so we really just need to heal within ourselves. And it's and I think, you know, that's another one of the blessings of at least being in isolation a little bit, is that we have no choice but to be with ourselves right now, and to really sort of go inwards. And I think a lot of people are, it's breaking a lot of people, because usually we're able to do this work in community and in connection with others, which is so important, I think, to the work. But yeah, for me, that's all I could do is change myself. I don't feel like, and it's all part of a huge plan, and I trust in divine justice, and I trust in the divine plan. And there's, you know, one of the isn't there a joke that what's God, what, oh, how do you make God laugh? Make, and how you make
I've
plans,
never heard
right?
that.
Right. So yeah.
Okay, I have heard
So
that
we could
actually.
plan, we could try, we could do what we want, but
Oh,
God's
yeah.
plan is what's going to come, it's going to happen, and I trust that.
I think that's such an important message for just where people are at, where I feel like so many people are at now, is that, yeah, so many of us just get caught up, like I said earlier, in trying to control people, trying to
Right.
control circumstances, and we simply just can't. And so just coming back into your
Yeah.
own, again, it's all about inner sovereignty and inner authority. And again, like, we just don't know what's happening energetically when we really tune
Yeah.
into ourselves. You know, when we heal ourselves, we don't know how that may
It changes
energetically
the
affect
whole
the people that we
universe.
live
It
with and the
really
people in
does.
our neighborhood. There's
It
so much
does.
that we. Yeah. And again, like, they will tell us that it's pseudoscience, but it's like, I've seen what your science
Yeah,
does to a lot of
exactly.
people,
And
and
I,
I'm
you know,
just
I
not
think
buying it
the and the more healing we
anymore. Not
do,
buying it anymore.
real true healing will open up ways for us to help each other heal too, and to repair certain karmic agreements and contracts that we have with each other. So, you know, I think, I mean, I feel I'm sensing from you a question like, what about, you know, the whole question about privilege? Is it just privilege for us to just sit back and be like, oh, I'm going to work on myself and not deal with the rest of the world? We still have to be part of the matrix, and we still have to, you know, we can't disconnect completely. We are still humans, and we have responsibilities to each
For
other here
sure.
on this planet. Like, we all came to be here together. So, and I think the more healing that we do from within, the more we will be guided on how to heal those things that need to be healed within the collective as well. And I think everybody has something to offer the co in this sort of the, you know, as we dismantle the victim template within us, we're also going to be dismantling it within the American minds, the collective of the American minds, and we're also going to be dismantling it on a global scale as well. And all of us have something to contribute to that. And I think the more healing we do within, the more it becomes clear what our purpose and our role is in the collective.
Love that. Well, and two, like, one last thing, I feel that folks, I need to
Yes.
remember talking to myself here, that things happen in seasons. You know, like, if you do have a period where you simply just need to tune out any other energy and move to a freaking island or something like that, if you're able to do so, to just disconnect from the matrix for a while. You know, like, I think it's okay to have seasons like that, as long as we know that we can't complete. I mean, you could, I
Yeah.
guess, if you wanted to, anybody can do whatever they want, but that's not my path. I know that I don't want to move to a freaking, I mean, maybe Mexico or something like that, but not somewhere so isolated that I would be completely, like, not in tune with anything that's happening. Like,
Yeah.
I want the craziness. I
And I
want to
think it
be in the
also really
midst of it
depends on
all.
intention. Like,
So.
are we escaping because we just don't want to deal with it? Because that is a little bit privileged and unfair,
Exactly.
right? Because
100%.
none of us really want to deal with this, right?
For
But
sure.
are we escaping because, or are we getting away because we are trying to find ourselves, and then we're going to come back and like and do the work with everybody else, you know? So I think there's different layers, and it really just comes down to what the intention is. And I can understand, you know, a lot of there's been, from what I understand, there's been a lot of white flight out of the States lately, to these islands and stuff. And, you know, I can understand the criticism of that, because it's like, well, wait a minute, you guys, your people's kind of created this mess we're in. You can't just take off right now. You know, like, that's not, and I think a lot of the wellness community does that, and the new age, like, oh, well, everything is perfect and we don't have to change anything, and it's all divine plan and airy fairy, and, you know, we're love and light, and that's all we're doing. But that's not the reality on the ground. And I think if you did, if you they do their real inner work, they're going to know that there is some karmic ancestral agreements that need to be repaired with Black, Indigenous people of color, and that, that light airy fairy
Broke, yep.
escapism is never going to take that away. Like there's still have we still have to confront that. Like there is still a repair that needs to happen with white people and BIPOC communities in this country and
Yep.
around the world. So I think part of the work, you know, people of BIPOC communities, we've kind of been doing the work on a social, on that sort of external place for many, many years. And I think a lot of us are kind of tired and like, oh, you know, white people, now it's your time to step up in the social justice movement. And I think that's why there might be a lot of pressure in white communities to show up in a specific way. And so I can understand that as well, but I think showing up without doing the work is just performative and it's not authentic and it's actually not going to get us anywhere. That the inner work is more
That's
important is
so,
important to do
yes.
alongside. And when you do, and I think when the inner work is done, it becomes clear what the outer work needs to be. And then it won't come from this savior complex or from white guilt. Or from, and then it comes from an authentic place, from true love. And yeah.
And I see so much of that. To be like quite frank, I'm very frustrated with a lot of white women specifically these days, because there's so much, and again, I always have to be like, am I projecting? Because am I actually doing this? It's just like outsourcing it, and I don't think that I am. I think there is a lot of performative white saviorism type of stuff happening under the guise of allyship, and I don't like the idea that, like, I had some comments on my social media a few weeks ago, and I was writing something from my perspective, and I even had a disclaimer that, like, I understand this may be privilege, but like, this is my story. If you don't resonate with it, blah blah blah, and this white woman came on and was just educating me on my privilege and telling me that I needed to basically, I don't even remember what she was saying. I should have had this more clear in my brain, but it was just a white woman basically coming in and trying to educate me on something that I had already provided a disclaimer about. And it just felt so performative to me. And it felt like she was coming from the guise of like having to protect black women. And I was like, granted, yes, there's a layer of that that can be true, but what if we like
They don't.
empower black women that they, why do they need white women to protect them? You know, and I hate that shit. I'm like, that feels like, and again, if I speaking hypothetically, if I was a black woman, I would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why would I
Yeah,
need
what we
you,
need,
a
what
white
black people
woman, to
need, what
protect
we,
me?
I mean,
Like,
I
that
can't say
just
what black
feels
people need, but
gross.
at least from a person of color's perspective, what we need from white women is to check themselves and to clear their own shadows. Yeah, that's what we need from them.
For sure.
And like, yeah, so that
Yeah.
again, doing the inner work first to prioritize that, I think. And yeah, and really, I think more than
For
anything,
sure.
I
Yeah.
think, you know,
Go ahead. Sorry.
there has to be a place where white people are okay with being uncomfortable, because I think there's, and being uncomfortable alone and on their own,
Yes.
not being like uncomfortable and having people of color witness their discomfort, because that's also very self-serving. You know what I mean? So just to be uncomfortable and work through that discomfort and work through the ancestral imprints that have come. Where you feel, or where there's an entitlement that we don't have to feel this discomfort. And if we do, everybody needs to witness it and validate it for us, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, that brings up
Yeah.
so many. We can literally talk for like 10 hours. One more thing I wanted to say on that too. Like, I think it's important for everybody nowadays to
Yeah.
just like not let anybody tell them who
Yeah.
they are, because I or what they should feel about something, or what they should be angered about, or what they should love, or what they should hate, you know, because that goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast, is like the media and social media really, they're largely echo chambers, you
And a
know,
lot
and
of
there's a lot
cancel
of groupthink
culture
hive
and
mind going on
silencing
where it's
and
like,
shaming and
I, yes, that I just hope that like like, and then me specifically as a white person, and I even feel uncomfortable saying this, but like for a long time, I let a lot of white activists or people who are in the social justice space like tell me that I was a racist person. And yes, I do have a racist sickness inside of me from growing up in America and the way I was
I'm
programmed, but
working
I've
on
done so much work on
it.
that where it was like, hold up a second, like I wonder if like maybe you know what I'm saying? Yeah, and like I'm not gonna take on that identity just because I'm a
Yes.
white person and that's what I'm supposed to be doing these days, you know? So yeah, that's for everybody. I feel like there's so much of that happening where it's like, well, this is my skin color, so I have to wear this identity. When it's like there's just people are too individual, especially in America. We're too much of a melting pot to have these
Yeah, and I
conversations on
think
such a
also it
general
like
level, if
when
that
we're
makes sense, I
limiting
believe.
the way that we show up, then we're not really gonna deal with the true sickness, right? Like we're only dealing with the symptoms and the so like one thing that I know for
Yep,
sure is that I
100%.
appreciate a blatant racist to one of those white liberals that pretends not to be racist, but then, you know, is participating constantly in racist policies or racist practices within these institutions and this systemic racism. You know what I mean?
Oh my
So I would
God.
much rather have somebody just say, I don't like Muslims, I don't like Arabs
Yes.
in my face, and then I know who that person is than somebody that pretends to be my ally and in reality isn't. You know what I mean? So
Rena, you are speaking my language. I've literally had, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I've had so many conversations about that exact thing. I'm like, I would rather somebody literally shoot me point blank in the head
Yes,
than
and I
put
think
their
that's
arm around me
also
acting like they're gonna
something
be my
that
friend
I
and shooting
learned
me in
to
the back.
appreciate. I know everybody's gonna hate me for saying this, but I learned to appreciate that with Trump because I hated that about him in the beginning. I mean, for most of his term, that's the part that I would refuse to see and listen to. But then it, you know, one of my, but the Democrats are him, but in different clothes. Like they're like Biden is Trump, but he's just looks like he carries the appearance of an actual president, whereas Trump doesn't. You know what I mean? So I would much rather have a seat, like, you know, one of my friends describes the Republicans and the
100%.
Democrats as like a good cop and the bad cop. Like one, you know, they're both cops and they're both trying to interrogate you and put you in prison, but one is appearing as your ally and one is just being straight up in your face. And I think I would definitely prefer to know that the cop is not my friend, you know, than to protect that than to fall for the act. So anyway, that's all to say that I would much prefer that, and we had talked about not being politically correct. I think that political correctness in a lot of ways is part of white fragility because it's uncomfortable. It makes it, you know, Black Indigenous people of color are uncomfortable constantly. They're Black people probably, I mean, I from my understanding, live in constant fear. Their lives are on the line every time they walk out in the streets, right? So I think political correctness and silencing and stuff is a way of not is keeping white people in the place of comfort and not really doing the work. Because if a white person could admit that and say in like to my face that they have racist feelings towards me or that they don't accept me or something like that, that takes a lot of courage and bravery. And you know, I understand that there's a lot of violence and historical violence that's attached to those statements, and that's why they're so triggering. But I would much rather white people sit with the truth that they actually have that belief and confront it than pretend that they don't. I don't think that's serving us at all. So, yeah.
I love that. There's a whole nother argument on the other side that one of my roommates is Mexican, and she told me that she would much rather have somebody who is covert rather than overt, because she believed that overt like Trump was too radical, where he radicalized so many people. And it's interesting to hear your perspective, because I just had this conversation with her about a week
Oh,
ago,
that's
and she
so
said
interesting. Yeah,
she would
everybody
much
has a
rather have
different
somebody
way of
stab her in the
wanting
back,
to.
which is just
I'm
fascinating.
tend to be the
So,
type of person that prefers direct, straight talk, not, in general, like in just irregular communication too. But yeah, for me, I think it's always, I've always been more traumatized by like when the Arab revolutions happened and there were these massacres that were happening in Syria. I was just so devastated, and it was, and I mean, I'm devastated every time there's something that happens in our region, of course, but this time it was different, and it was different. I mean, it was children that were being massacred deliberately, but it was like, and I remember one of my friends asking, saying, "But Israel does it to Palestinians all the time," and I was like, "Yeah, but when it's your own people doing it, like it hurts me more. I don't know, when it's my own people doing it to each other," and so. I think that might be kind of part of it too. It's like I don't want to. It's easier to say, oh, it's those people over there. They're not part of me, and they just hide it. I don't want to see it, than to know that they're actually there among us, and there are people, like, you know what I mean, that are doing it to each other. Like, yeah.
Absolutely. I totally resonate with that, and I align with you in this conversation, because I'm totally a truth seeker through and through. And I suffered in my family a lot growing up for numerous reasons, but one, because my dad was just lying a lot, and I can feel when there's inauthenticity. I can feel when I'm being lied to, and I'm like, I can handle the truth. Even if it hurts, I can handle it. I cannot handle the covert like manipulation
And
and
that
lying. That
actually
it
doesn't
eats
make
away
it
at my
makes things
soul.
worse. In my opinion, because that puts things in the shadow and in the dark. And when things are in the dark, then they're just festering and they're growing and they're getting worse and bigger because we're not dealing with it. So, and I, like Trump didn't change anything really, except that he emboldened what was already there, and it was a shock to everybody. But it's, I think it was especially a shock to white people to see how many blatant racists there are in this country. And I think that that is what made people so uncomfortable with Trump, is that that's what made people uncomfortable, white people in particular. It was so uncomfortable for people that they couldn't, that especially white people, to see that there were all this racism that we don't want to see it. Like, we would rather just not see it and go back to the way we were. But it's just gonna get worse, unless we need that karmic repair. It's been a
Oh,
long,
for
it's been
sure. And
over 400 years now.
You're like, it's about time here, people. And I can speak to that really quick. Last thing, I can speak to that as a white person too, because I felt so much discomfort. And I even felt, to be completely candid with you, I felt those feelings where I was like, okay, people, come on. Like, this happened years and years and years ago, and I had to get the fuck over that. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's important too for white folks, and in my opinion, to say things like I just said and be like, yeah, you know what? I had those feelings and I worked through them, and I realized I learned how to not center myself, and I learned how to do X, Y, and Z. I think that there, and granted, not necessarily to Black Indigenous people
Yeah,
of color, like
and I think that's
probably
part of
those
it too.
conversations among fellow
Because
white
you guys
folks,
have a lot
but
of work to do together.
I think we need to, I think we need to. For sure, we need to not be afraid to be vulnerable with each other. And I still have, I'm working on that, because I've had to sort of rearrange relationships that I've had in my own life with other white people, because there was just too much policing and too much just like not enough trying to working through it on yourself, and too much of trying to control me and other people and telling me that I was this and telling me that I was that. And I just, that's not, maybe that works for some
Or in
people,
your
but that's not
learning,
the way I
right?
roll in my relationships. So absolutely, in my unlearning, really, you know.
Yeah, I feel like we could keep
But
going.
okay, thank you so much. This conversation was absolutely, it was really, really wonderful. Okay, so there's one last question that I ask everybody that comes on the podcast. What is the biggest thing you have had to
Who
unlearn
I'm
in your
not?
life? Okay, love that. Amazing. Simple. Okay, Rena, well, like I said, thank you so much for being on. And can you just share really quick where people can find you and any
Sure.
projects or
So,
anything you sort of want to promote for yourself
my
that you have
company
coming
name
up?
is
That would be
Sukoon
awesome.
Holistics. So I'm Sukoon Holistics, dot com on Instagram. I'm Sukoon Holistics, and that's spelled Sukuun Holistics. I offer services in homeopathy and nutrition, as you heard in the intro. And I'm currently working on putting together a course on casting your own archetypal wheels, which if you find my Instagram, you'll find some information on archetypes and archetypal wheels or soul maps, basically, and sacred contracts. And I also am co I'm co-run the healingstudioonline.com with my husband, who is also a mind body practitioner. And it's a platform where we have different practitioners bringing their different healing services online for classes, and a lot of them are free. We have like classes in breath work and yoga, resiliency classes, trauma-informed classes. We have all kinds of stuff, and that's where I'll be offering my courses on archetypal work, and that's also where I offer my homeopathy and nutrition classes and stuff. So I do a lot of different things. I have an air temperament, so I'm kind of like all over the place. But check me out in all of those places. Hopefully, you'll find something you like or I can help you with.